looked at the nuts and bolts and the instructions, but now we're going to just see how you actually do it from the big book, because the four steps seems overwhelming to newcomers. I think it's because it's not explained. It's not complicated at all. The four step is very well outlined in the big book, but there are all these other four steps that you can find on the internet. Treatment centers have their own four step. Some people do the four step out of the 12 and 12. The 12 and 12 was not intended to be an instruction or directions on how to do the steps. If you read the four step on the 12 and 12, you don't see the name God at all. You see some essays on the seven deadly sins. And there's nothing wrong with that. I'm not being negative, but that was written in 1955 by an alcoholic, a single author. And if you can work the four step out of that, that's great. I think that the reason people don't work the four step out of the big book is because they haven't done it themselves, so they can't, they haven't shown people. It's something that the studying of the book, it sort of got lost for a while, but I think there's been a renaissance on working the steps out of the book. And you see it when you look at the XA speakers and you see these workshops and things. So the it starts on page 63 where they have a prayer. And it's called the third step prayer, which a lot of people like to say. And they make a decision here that they're going to follow through on a program of action so that they're not playing God and they can have God direct them. And then it says at the bottom of 63 that it's a beginning, a great effect is felt, but unless you follow through on a vigorous course of action, nothing's going to change. So the fourth step is where you're going to face and be rid of the things that are blocking you from God. Now, you hear at a lot of meetings, people say, I took it, or turned it over and took it back. I don't know what that means. What we do in recovery is we look at when we're blocked from God and we let go of it and ask God to take it away and get close to Him. And so if you turn it over and took it back, it means that you just never face to be rid of the things that are blocking you from God and you're living on self-will. And then, of course, things don't go well. And so the top paragraph of 64, they give us some reasons why we should do this. It says liquor's but a symptom. We want to get down the causes and the conditions of the of our spiritual malady, of our separation from God. And the conditions are three conditions: resentment, fear, and our conduct that where we harm people. And the causes, we're going to look at the character defects that that self-centeredness produces that causes these conditions. And so that's what you do in the fourth step. And it starts on the bottom of page 64. They talk about resentment. And resentment is a manifestation of self. When you're in self, you get angry a lot. And a lot of people argue about how long is a resentment and whether what's anger versus resentment. If you stay angry, then you have a resentment. If you get angry and you let go of it, it's not a resentment. So if you get angry during the day, but then you hold on to it and you think about it an hour later and you're still upset, it becomes a resentment. Now, I've been at a meeting where people argued how many minutes it takes to go from being angry to a resentment. The point is, are you free of the anger or do you still hold it? And what they say in the big book, and here's the first instruction, it's very complicated. It says, in dealing with resentments, we set them on paper. Now, here's how they define a resentment. You're going to list people, institutions, or principles with whom you were angry. So anybody that you were angry with in your whole life, any people, any institutions, or principles. So the first thing you're going to do is you're going to get a notebook, and you're going to have a paper. And I've done it many ways, but I finally found this was the easiest. And believe it or not, it wasn't my suggestion. And you're going to take four columns. You're going to take two sheets of paper, and you're going to draw a line down the center. That's not very hard, is it?
No.
Got it? And then you're going to make four columns. Now you're going to list the first column. You're going to list people, institutions, or principles with whom you're angry. Now a lot of people say they never had any resentments. Well, start with your early childhood and go through your whole life, or the other way is to start with everybody you were ever related to, married, had relationships with, any people you went to school with, any people you worked with, any of your teachers, anybody in any institutions. And you'll see a lot of names, people that bothered you. People that bothered you, and then they're the big resentments, people obviously you're really angry at. And then they're the ones that bothered you, and you're going to see how you were bothered a lot. You'll see how you had a lot of anger in your life if you're honest about it. And so you do it, and I put three to each page. You do four columns. So, and then the second page, you do four, five, and six. And then I usually, they look at me strangely. I'm sure there are a lot of reasons for that. But I say start with the big 25. But then when you start doing your 25, you'll see 50. It's not a contest to see how many resentments you have. That's not the point of this exercise. The point of the exercise is to face the big resentments, the big people that you really blame, like Susie mentioned, that you really are angry at, and then see how so many people bothered you. And if you're angry or you're bothered by someone, there's a barrier between you and them. And then that barrier is between you and God. So you do that first, and it's suggested that you do the institution's principles first. You do the names, so you make a lot of pages, and you do the 25, 30 names. And then the second instruction is we asked ourselves why we were angry. They call this the cause. So you put the name and why you're angry. Now, they don't leave a lot of space when you look at the example for why you're angry. I had one guy had like 8 pages on his ex-wife. It might have helped him a lot, but I didn't want to hear it. And the thing is that we don't really care what they did in the end. And in fact, when you start doing this, the names aren't even important. It's to see how you use this resentment, how it blocked you from God. So you do why you were angry. So you work down. So you take the name, why you're angry, 3 or 4 things. Try to be specific. You know, you didn't like the way they looked at you. They yelled at you at work. You yelled at them. They took your kids. They left you. They came back. It could be endless. But it's very important that you make it succinct, and that you you try to capture the essence. And so those are the first two columns, and that's not hard, is it? Then the third column is where you start to really learn some things that I never knew. I never knew till I actually did it this way. And I went to a lot of meetings where we talked about resentments a lot, but I didn't realize why I have resentments. Now, the third column is what was threatened. And it says in the book, it tells you, lists 7 or 8 things. Self-esteem, was my self-esteem, how I feel about myself, good or bad, was it threatened? Was my pocketbook money threatened? Was my ambitions threatened? My personal relationships, including sex, hurt or threatened? So we were sore, we were burned up. Now what happens, and I didn't realize, is that if you threaten my money, I get fear and I get angry. So you're threatening my money, oh, I'm not gonna have any money, they're gonna take it away from me, I'm angry at you. If you threaten my ambitions, oh, I'm not gonna get what I want, I'm angry at you. If you threaten my relationships, I'm angry, I'm not gonna get what I want. Now, and the other thing you learn is your self-esteem is so entwined with what people think of you that you become dependent on other people. And you'll get angry at people if you think your self-esteem is threatened. And then sometimes your threatened self-esteem will be so high and you'll get angry at them for threatening that. And your self-esteem can be high and low at the same person. It's so crazy, but we're alcoholics. And our self-esteem is threatened a lot, and it generates fear. And it generates fear because I'm afraid people won't approve of me. I won't be good enough. And so I didn't understand that you don't get angry unless you're threatened in some way. And they also add security, and they add pride. And is my pride threatened? How people see me. If you treat me a certain way, then my pride's threatened because people are seeing that. And I'm not getting treated the way I think I deserve. So the third column is why were you threatened? What was you threatened? And you have the list, and you can make a checklist. You can do it any way you want. You can do. I've made this for those. Maybe I lost it already. I'm old. I said, what was threatened? So you have eight things, and you have it here. You take the name and you write it out, and you try to think. Now a lot of people just put self-esteem. Well, that's great, but you really want to see how is your self-esteem really threatened. What was it about this? How they treated you? How did you looked at yourself? Why did it make you feel good or bad about yourself? So it's more than just saying, yes, my pocketbook. How was the pocketbook affected? And then what you learn is not only were you threatening, you had fear, but you see how you decide what your self-esteem should be. You decide what your ambitions are. You decide how much money you need. You decide what you need in relationships. And you decide how you're to be seen by others. And when you do that, remember those instincts of life? You're running the world on how you want this to turn out. And if it's threatened at all, you get angry. So the whole purpose of a God-centered life is to go from me being self-centered, deciding what I want in all those areas, to being a child of God, and I want to have a relationship with God to fulfill those needs. Does this make sense? So it's not hard to do the three columns. Now, here's the thing that I didn't realize that most people don't do. And it's in the big book, and it's very important. In fact, it's probably made the biggest difference in my life. If you turn to page 66, now, Susie read the paragraph about the life, which includes deep resentment and all of that. We know all that. We talk about that. It shuts me off from God. I harbor these things. I can't. It's futile. It's a waste of time, right? We all know that. And then we all say if we're going to live, we have to be free of anger. Anybody agree with that?
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, it doesn't say in the big book you can't be angry. It says you want to be free of it. So you can get angry, you can get bothered, and then you can stop and do what we're going to see is the instructions in this next two paragraphs that changes your life. Because you've been to a lot of meetings where people have talked about resentments, right? And they're really worked up and they're justified always. And they go in great detail. But here's the thing. If you go down the once you do the three columns, now the way I do it with somebody is I have them do the three columns. And then they go through it. And then after we get through the three columns, we do this. And it says we turn back to the list, for it holds the key to the future. And it says these people are dominating us. How can I escape? Resentments must be mastered, but how? Well, this was our course. They're going to tell you now in two paragraphs how to master resentment. And it's so simple and it's so essential because the point of this inventory is not to see what they did, but for me to be free of anger and for me to be free of anger towards these people. Does that make sense? And for me to forgive them and see them differently. So you do the first three columns. And then you sit down with somebody and you read these paragraphs, and it has four prayers, four things that you're supposed to do whenever you're angry. So they say you're going to look at these from a different angle. And you say these people were perhaps spiritually sick. Well, I say they're human beings. They are what they are. We all have our issues. And it says we don't like their symptoms and the way they disturb me. They, like me, were sick too. So we're in a world where people have conflict, we don't like the way people are, they have their agenda, we have our agenda. So here's the first prayer. You're bothered. You got a name here. You say, God, help me show them the same tolerance, pity, and patience that I would cheerfully grant a sick friend. You want God to give you the way to have tolerance, pity, and patience. You want to be patient, you want to have understanding, and you want to be tolerant of them as human beings and considerate. That's the first prayer. Then the second thing is when they offend you, you say to yourself, so-and-so is a sick man. What you're basically saying is they're entitled to be a human being, and I don't like the way they are. They're in front of me at the line. They've got 50 coupons, a grocery cart full of stuff, and I just have toothpaste, and I'm sitting behind them. But you just say, well, this is the way they are. And you say, how can I be helpful to them? So that's the second prayer. One, God, show me same tolerance, pity, and patience I would cheerfully grant a sick friend. If I have tolerance, pity, and patience, then I can't be angry at them. How can I be helpful to them? That's the theme of the big book, right? Turn yourself away from the anger to how you can be helpful. And then here's the third and most important prayer. God, save me from being angry. I want to be saved from my anger by God. And I say those three things automatically, thy will be done. Now, it doesn't say here to pray for other people. I won't go into that. Some people think you do. Some people think you don't. It's in the Freedom of Bondage chapter at the end of the book. I'm not arguing whether it's good or bad. The problem with that is I don't want to pray for them till I've had God save me from being angry at them. And I don't want to be praying for them because they're so bad and they need my prayers. I want to pray for me to be saved from my anger. And I want to be loving, patient, and tolerant to them. And then if you don't change the way you are, you keep saying it. You just say, and then you decide how angry you want to be. Well, do I still want to be angry, or do I want to be relieved of the anger? And you say, God, save me from being angry. And then here's the fourth prayer. And it says, you don't retaliate or argue. You don't want to destroy your chance of being helpful. Now, here's something. I cannot be helpful to all people. But here I ask God, show me how to have a kind and tolerant view of every person. Like, love your neighbor as yourself. Do unto others as you would have them do to you. The golden rule. How can you be kind and tolerant view of every human being? And you do that, and you do it till you change the way you see them. Now, a lot of people go on and they talk about their part or the other person's part and what mistakes they made. The big book's very clear that you don't do that till you've said the prayers and you've forgiven these people. And then it says after that, the fourth column is referring to my list again, putting out of my mind the wrongs others have done. You see, we put it away. They're not in my mind. They don't have power over me anymore. Now, if they don't have power over me and I'm not angry at them, then I can actually look and see what mistakes I made to cause the resentment. Now, it doesn't say their part or my part. These people really don't have a part in me getting angry. It's my decision to get angry at them. Now, they may have behavior, but it's my decision to be angry. And so I put out of the minds the wrongs others have done. I resolutely look for my own mistakes. And so that's the fourth column. You could do it two ways. You could do a fourth and fifth column. You could do the fourth column, what were your mistakes? And you list your mistakes. What did you do? All right, this one did this, and this one did that. But you know what? I was drunk all the time, and I didn't come home at night. So that's why they locked me out of the house. Now, when you hear how they locked me out of the house, and they wouldn't let me see the kids, and everybody goes, oh, my God, she's a monster. But then you look and you see, well, gee, I never came home. I didn't pay the bills. I didn't go to work. You see, so you don't do the fourth column until you've really looked. And when you do it with somebody, when you look at the first two, three columns, you can see the truth. You ask them, is this really true? Is what they did actually true, or is it imagined? And then when you put in perspective with your mistakes, you can see the truth of this. So you can see, be free of it. So you can do, what were your mistakes? And then you could do a fifth column, where had I been selfish? And it's good to put in an example. Selfish, were you dishonest? You could be dishonest in a lot of ways. You could be lie about your feelings, right? You can be dishonest about your motives. You could be not dishonest in your behavior. Self-seeking, were you seeking things from them for self, and were you frightened? And that's the fourth column. And the other question is, where were you to blame? So you look at what was your mistakes, where had you been selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened, and where were you to blame? Because it's your inventory, it's not theirs. You're not inventorying them, you're looking away from that. So that's the four columns on resentments. And if you do that, you'll see a lot of truth. You'll see how almost all these resentments were caused by some fear or some behavior on my part or the way I saw them. The other thing that I added, it's not in the book, so don't report me. But, Joe and Charlie add this, and I think it's true of almost every resentment I have, and it's in the sex inventory, is inconsideration. And whenever I'm being inconsiderate, I'm judging these other people, deciding how they should be, and I'm not accepting them, that they just are the way they are. She brought 50 coupons, God bless her. You know? And so it sounds silly, but we can get upset about a lot of little crap. And so we want to see that. So I'm always being inconsiderate when I judge somebody and I get angry at them. And then I have to say, am I being honest? And they usually, it's usually a fear that in relation to them, I'm not good enough, or they're not treating me the way I deserve, or something that's related to these self-centered fears. And then you can be free of that. It doesn't take long to do. You do 25 of them. You go through each one of them with your sponsor, and you see a pattern, and you get a lot of information from it. It doesn't have to be done perfectly. It's not going to be graded. You're not going to be on CNN. People aren't going to say, oh, look at Michael's inventory. He didn't do a good job. Nobody cares. It's for you. It's for you to make a start at trying to see your truth of your behavior, the truth of your thinking, and how your resentments are always wrong. They're of no value. You're always being judgmental. And then the other thing about the resentment is we don't excuse people. Some people do really bad things. We're not excusing them, but we're forgiving them. That's where this idea that they are sick people, they do things that you don't approve of. You don't have to excuse them, but you always have to forgive them. There's a big difference. All right, so that's the resentment inventory. And then when you do the resentment inventory and you see fear, it says you're frightened, you're going to see how fear led to these resentments. And a lot of them is they did something. You're going to take something away. You're not going to get something you want. You're going to find out what you did in relation to people, some behavior, some action. Then we do fear inventory. The fear inventory is the next one. It says fear is bracketed along these difficulties with Mr. Brown. And it's an evil word. It causes us all these problems. It's throughout our whole existence. Fear is the killer for alcoholics. And then the fear instructions are, you look at your fears and you put them on paper. So you could take a sheet, do four columns, and it says, I put them on paper. So you list all your fears. This is like fear not having enough money, fear not having a job, fear of failure, fear of not being good enough, fear she's going to leave me, fear she's going to come back. All these fears that you have in relation to your health, AA, God. We looked at the second step proposition, which looks at these fears when I choose God is nothing and I'm everything and I'm managing an area of my life, I have fear. So it's very helpful. We went through the second step proposition, which has to do with fear. So you commit fear and it says, why do I have these fears? Why do I have a fear of money? Well, I'm not going to have enough money, right? And God won't provide enough money for me. And it says, well, I'm relying on myself. Was it because self-reliance failed me? So it says, why can't I give this to God? Why did self-reliance fail me? Well, if I have fear because I'm relying on self, why can't I give it to God? Well, I have fear of money because I'm not going to have enough money, and then I can't give it to God because he doesn't know how much money I need, which sounds silly. But why can't we give it to God? Because we don't trust God. And then I decide how much money I need. And I'm afraid God won't meet my expectations. So we have to get out of that kind of thinking to saying, I'm going to give this to God. So it says, I give it to God. And it says, I trust God, infinite God, rather than myself. So then the fourth column is the prayer and the instructions for being free of fear. And the fourth column is, what is the role he assigned me? And then the second question is, can let him demonstrate through me what he can do? So where you're getting back from, I'm not going to have enough money because God doesn't know that I need $1,000, to what's the role that I should play in, as being a servant of God? Could God demonstrate through me what he could do? I have to be a servant of God. And then it has the prayer. God, remove my fear and direct my attention to what you would have me be. So you write out, you say, God, remove my fear of not having any money and direct my attention to how he would have me be. How does God want me to be, not do? And he wants me to be trusting, courageous, patient with what I his plan for me, grateful for what I have. Be the best employee that I can be in that job. And if I need more money, God, help me find a better job, if that's your will for me. And how can I be more responsible? So the being leads to the doing. And that's it for fear. And you can do it for money, jobs, relationships. You can do it for... one of the things is for me is I want people to like me, people-pleasing. I'm dependent on people. Why am I dependent on people for approval rather than you, God? You see, why do I do that? Why can't I just be a servant of God, trust in you, God, and be dependent on you and not people? And so how should I be? I should be a servant. I should be of service to everybody. I need to be loving, patient, kind, and tolerant. Get out of self. So that's it for fear. It's not that complicated. Now, sex. So for sex, they want you to look at your conduct. Now you can do your sex conduct and you can do conduct in other relationships. So this could be a harm inventory in which you harm people in sexual relationships and you harm people in other relationships. And so on page 69, it says you review your conduct. So you put the names and you ask yourself, where had I been selfish, dishonest, or inconsiderate? These are the questions, not that complicated. So you have the name, you put the name down. Was I selfish? Was I dishonest? Was I inconsiderate? How did I hurt them? Did I hurt these people? Whom did I hurt? So you could have people you hurt in sexual relationships, people you hurt in other relationships. Then they ask you three more questions. Did you arouse jealousy, suspicion, or bitterness? And so there are about seven questions. Selfish, dishonest, inconsiderate, who did you hurt? Did you unjustifiably arouse jealousy, suspicion, or bitterness? So you could have a sheet of paper where all the questions are written out. You put the name, you look at the questions, and you say yes or no. And then it says, where was I at fault? What should I have done instead? That could be the third column. And then the fourth column is, was I selfish or not? Is it a selfish relationship? And then after you do that, then it says you look at all that information and you try to mold your ideals in a relationship. And you can write it out. What are the ideals? How is the behavior you would like to have in a relationship? And then how do you live up to that? Your ideals of how you're going to be. And then you might use the same thing to look in somebody that you want to have a relationship with, characteristics you'd like them to have. And then you look at that as a goal in a relationship, what you're going to give to the relationship, what you're going to bring to the relationship, and what attributes of you want to see in the other person. And that's it. And when you've done that, you've learned a lot. And it doesn't take that long to do it. Because you see a pattern. You see, what you want to see is the result of living a life run on self-will. You want to see a life of self-centeredness, how you were full of anger, how you were afraid all the time, and how you harmed people. And you don't want to be that way anymore. Now, why is that important? Well, the fifth step is just where you're going to admit to yourself, God, and somebody else, how selfish you were, how dishonest, how inconsiderate, how self-seeking, how you were judgmental. All your character defects that came out that caused you to harm yourself and others. And that's the fifth step. And then you use that information, step six. We have our card. Our card is all the characteristics. Oh, I never have what I needed. All the characteristics of a self-centered person. And when you do your four step, you see all these. And you see how it led to behaviors, relationships, situations that caused you harm. And you can see how your life ended up where it was. It wasn't them, it was you. And so you use that information, six and seven, to change the way you are all day long. So I hope that was helpful. It's not that complicated. And some people do it all at once, hours. I find with people it's helpful to do, I do the three columns, then we do the prayers, then they do the fourth column, then we go over that, then we do the fears that aren't related to that, then they do their relationships.
John, I'll call it.
Wait a second, John. I got to turn this off because I don't want to get in trouble with AA and all.